The following Dharma talk was recorded in July 2013 in St. Louis, Missouri. It is one of five recordings from the retreat called Living Our Lives Fully, taught by Phil Jones. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. The retreat teacher, Phil Jones, has been teaching insight meditation since 1996. He has studied with Matthew Flickstein and teachers from Spirit Rock and the Insight Meditation Society. He has served on the board of directors of Mid-America Dharma since the mid-90s. More can be found about Phil at www.silentmindopenheart.org.
So welcome. So one of the most fundamental of the teachings in Buddhism, if not the most fundamental, is the idea that actions have consequences and that these consequences can be understood to either lead us towards stress, struggle, unsatisfactoriness, anguish, suffering, this kind of whole range of usually unpleasant experiences, or the consequences can lead us towards happiness, goodwill, compassion, harmony with others, and the cessation of suffering, stress, struggle, all those things. As the Buddha, before his own enlightenment, examined this for himself, he came to realize that the thing that was really crucial in this wasn't simply what our actions are, but the intentions behind our actions, the intentions that set the stage for those actions to actually develop. So that we can have intentions that lead to skillful or unskillful actions in terms of deeds or our behavior in the world, in terms of the words that we speak or write, and in terms of the thoughts that we have as well. So, intentions are pretty important for us. And I'd like to begin the retreat by really spending some time on intentions, what our intentions are as we begin the retreat, and then also setting some intentions that will help us to practice individually and as a community for the weekend in a way that is supportive for all of us. So just take a moment and reflect on what the intention is that you're bringing with you into this retreat. What is it that you're hoping you'll get, you're hoping will happen you're hoping you'll do. We all generally bring really personal, individual intentions with us. But sometimes we bring intentions where we just want to have some time where we can quiet the mind and the body and find a little peace for our hearts, a little solace for our hearts. Sometimes we bring with us a desire to strengthen the qualities of mindfulness and concentration. Sometimes we come with the intention that we want our practice on this retreat to be another step in our effort to really awaken ourselves to our own lives and to find for ourselves freedom from suffering. There's one intention that I think kind of sums up or includes all of these, an intention I would encourage all of us to practice this weekend, which is simply the intention to be present for whatever arises in our minds or in our hearts. To just be present for whatever it is. Since this isn't the first retreat for any of you, I'm sure all of you know that's easy to say and not quite so easy to do. That's actually what our practice is, being present in that way. We're fortunate that the Buddha, after his own awakening, decided to share teachings, tips, and tools with all the rest of us so that we could learn how to relate to our lives in this way as well. As he was lying on his deathbed, it's recorded that the last words that he shared with his followers was, "Strive on tirelessly." There's different translations of it, but essentially, keep trying. Don't give up. Keep striving for what's possible. And if you spend any time looking at the suttas, at the Buddha's discourses, you'll find that lots and lots of times he talked about effort in terms of striving, really striving hard. To realize freedom for oneself. As the teachings have come to the West, I think we've all realized more and more that striving really hard is what we typically do. That's the typical attitude that we bring. And while that may be really helpful advice to bhikkhus and bhikkhunis who were, you know, practicing in their 3-month rains retreat at the time of the Buddha, or people who are on a 3-month retreat or something like that now, that after a while, you know, maybe their inspiration and their motivation and their effort begins to lag a little bit, and they need to be reminded to put a little bit more into it. But for most of us, there's actually another teaching that the Buddha gave that's a little bit more helpful about effort. This is found in the Anguttara Nikaya, the connected discourses, the numerical discourses. And it's a story about a monk by the name of Sona. Sona was a relatively new bhikkhu, and he had a lot of passion for the practice and really wanted to wake up, to become fully awakened himself. And so, you know, he tried really, really hard, and one of the practices that he liked to do was walking meditation. So he'd walk and he'd walk and he'd walk and he'd walk. And he walked so much that the bottoms of his feet began to bleed. And, you know, so he was injuring himself, but he also would look around and he'd see his fellow monks, and there were people who seemed to be making more progress than he was. And he didn't understand this and started getting discouraged and feeling like, well, maybe he should disrobe and go back and just live with his family once again. Somehow the Buddha became aware of this. And so he went to visit Sona. And this is the dialogue that's recorded in the sutta. The Buddha said, "Tell me, Sona, in the past when you lived at home, weren't you skilled at the lute?" "Yes, Bhante." "What do you think, Sona? When its strings were too tight, was your lute well-tuned and easy to play?" "No, Bhante." "When its strings were too loose, was your lute well-tuned and easy to play?" "No, Bhante." "But, Sona, when its strings were neither too tight nor too loose, but adjusted to a balanced pitch, was your lute well-tuned and easy to play?" "Yes, Bhante." "So too, Sona, if energy is aroused too forcefully, this leads to restlessness. And if energy is too lax, this leads to laziness. Therefore, Sona, resolve on a balance of energy. Achieve an evenness of the spiritual faculties and take up the meditation object there." So it's important to make an effort. It can be valuable even to be passionate in one's devotion to the practice. But the important thing is to have a balance in one's effort. As the Buddha indicates, if we're pushing too hard, if we're striving too hard, if we have some idea of, I've got to get this, I've got to accomplish this, I've got to do this, then we typically end up putting in too much effort. We get tight. We get out of balance. And we experience either mental or physical or both restlessness. On the other hand, if we don't give it enough energy, then there's a tendency to fall asleep. Either to literally fall asleep on our cushions, or to fall asleep to what's actually coming up in our minds and in our hearts at any particular moment. One of the reasons that restlessness occurs is because there's too much energy there. That's not the only reason that restlessness is there. But it's important to investigate it if you begin noticing that. And, you know, one of the first things to look at is, am I trying too hard? Am I pushing for something in some way? And if it's that, see if you can relax a little bit, modify your intention a little bit. If it's not that, then investigate a little bit further, see what might be going on. Maybe there's something else that's trying to come up into awareness that there's some resistance to experiencing. Similarly, if you find yourself falling asleep, investigate it. Especially on the first couple of days of retreat, we may fall asleep just because we're tired. You know, literally, there's not enough energy. We lead lives that are constantly stimulated, constantly bombarded by all kinds of sense experiences. And then on top of that, probably most of us don't get enough sleep. So we come on retreat and we slow down, and it's like, you know, all of that sleepiness that's we've been running away from in our lives, all of a sudden it just rolls up on us, catches up with us, and we fall asleep when we don't intend to. So if you find yourself getting sleepy, pay attention, notice that. And there's skillful things you can do about it, and if it happens, you know, you can ask about how to manage that. But if you find you're not tired and you're still falling asleep, again, investigate. See if there's maybe something there that's trying to come up. Something that wants to be seen, wants to be known. One of the reasons it's important to have some balance in our effort is because actually when we're alert but relaxed, we're much more likely to develop a quality of concentration. We're much more able to really begin to focus in on what is happening right here. And again, this is something I'd encourage you to check this out for yourself. See if you find that that's true in your own experience. So there's two rituals that I find really helpful in terms of setting intentions. Going for refuge and taking the five precepts. This is actually a ritual that I engage in every day as a way of reminding myself of my own intentions for that particular day. And they can serve that same function for all of us as we practice together this weekend. In our normal everyday lives, when we're not aware of practicing, if we encounter something that is challenging to us in some way, it makes us uncomfortable, it's difficult, it's not what we expected, like finding out that we don't have dinner. There may be a tendency to react to it in a way where we back away in some form. Maybe we get angry about it. Maybe we go looking for some sensual pleasure that we think is going to make us feel better. Maybe we just kind of lapse into a quality of confusion or helplessness about it. I just don't know what to do about this. However we respond in these ways, the purpose is to get some distance from the thing that makes us uncomfortable, to back away from our edge out here. When we go for refuge, what we're doing is we're establishing for ourselves the intention that when we get to those edges of our lives, wherever that edge is at any particular time, that rather than just reacting as we normally might react, trying to back away from it and get comfortable, we're actually going to try to work with it. We're going to try to open up to it and see what it is and see if we can be with it. The theme of this retreat is living our lives fully. And if we want to live our lives fully, we need to be able to be present for whatever comes, whether it's pleasant or it's unpleasant, or even if it's neutral. And the refuges are an intention, a set of intentions that help us to do this, help us to live our lives fully. So going to the Buddha for refuge can be understood in a couple of different ways. One is the idea that we're going, come on in, Hi. One is the idea that we're going to refuge to the historical Buddha. And basically this means that we're expressing that we have trust in what this amazing human being realized for himself and then provided teachings, indicated a pathway so that the rest of us could realize it in our lives as well. We're indicating that we have trust that that is actually possible for us also. The Buddha was a human being. He realized it. We're human beings. We can realize it. So there's going for refuge in that sense. And that's really valuable. It's a source of, it can be a source of real inspiration for us, to reflect on the Buddha and what the Buddha, went through on his own path of awakening and what he realized for himself. But in terms of our own practices, probably even more important than that is the idea that in going to the Buddha for refuge, we're going to that quality within ourselves that allows us to be awake, allows us to know what it is that we're encountering in any particular moment of our lives. So it's an expression of trust in our ability to awaken in any particular moment. So, little awakenings, we're expressing trust in our ability to awaken in this moment, and we're expressing confidence in our ability to awaken more and more and more and more until complete awakening. Going to the Dhamma for refuge can also be understood in a couple of ways. It's an indication that we're willing to rely on the Buddha's teachings as the thing that's going to guide us in our practice. Actually, as the Buddha got closer to his death, as his monks were worrying about, you know, well, what will we do when you're gone and who will be our teacher? The Buddha told them a number of times, if you remember the teachings, if you see the Dhamma, you see the Buddha. So by taking refuge in the Buddha's teachings, we're taking refuge in the Buddha as well. Over the last few years, I've gotten more and more interested in studying the suttas myself, and they're just an amazing resource. You know, if you have a question about something, the answer's in there. The difficult part is just finding it, because there's thousands of suttas. But the answers are there. The answers are there. Going to the Dhamma for refuge also means Dhamma, another word, meaning of the word Dhamma is phenomena. And so going to the Dhamma for refuge means I'm going to the way things are. Particularly in the Thai forest tradition, they like to talk about it in terms of nature. This is the way nature is. And I'm going to the way nature is for refuge. We go for refuge to the Sangha. Most strictly, the term Sangha refers to all of the people, monastics and lay people, who have achieved, realized one of the levels of awakening that the Buddha indicated. So there's all these people from the time of the Buddha up to the present who have realized awakening to some extent. And when we go to refuge in the Sangha, we're expressing our trust in them. And again, we're also expressing our trust that in time, with practice, we can be part of that Sangha as well. In a broader sense, refuge in Sangha is referring to refuge in all the people who are practicing. And so, certainly, it's all of us who are here this weekend. So we're taking refuge in each other. I was on retreat recently, and it was a long retreat. And so there were times when, I mean, even on short retreats this happens, there were times when, you know, my motivation was flagging a little bit. And maybe I was walking down a hallway or looking out a window or just sitting on the porch. And I'd look up and there would be one of my fellow retreatants diligently practicing. And just seeing that was an encouragement to me to get on with it. To not give up. Try again. And so, as each of us is doing our practice this weekend, we're going to be supporting each other in exactly that way, whether we realize it or not. So one more thing about going for refuge, and really about the whole practice. We set this intention we have and acknowledge the ideal that we're shooting for, that we hope to make real in our own lives, and we start practicing, and at some point, we realize that we failed. And this is the way it works. We practice. We make a mistake. We fail. So when that happens, rather than getting judgmental with ourselves about it, what's useful is taking a few moments and reflecting. How did this happen? What didn't work here? What would make this be more successful, more useful? And then just begin practicing again. This is part of the commitment that we make when we go for refuge. That even when we do mess up, go for the Buddha, go to the Buddha. What is it that's been happening here? Go to the Dhamma. This is what it is. This is how it was. And then go to our commitment to living out of this pure heart and begin again. So the second ritual is taking the five precepts. I talked earlier about right effort in terms of balance. The Buddha also taught about right effort in terms of skillful and unskillful. When we encounter things, states of mind, words, deeds, that are already occurring and they're unskillful, right effort is to stop it. And if we notice an unskillful state that's beginning to arise, we keep it from arising. We see it. We watch it go. We let go of it. If a skillful state is present, we notice that, we appreciate that, we support that so that it will continue. We understand this is happening because of these particular conditions, and we keep trying to maintain those conditions. And if there's a skillful state that we sense is beginning to arise, we do everything we can to put that into place. So when we take the precepts as trainings, as ways that we're trying to work with our own experience, rather than as rules, I've got to behave this way. If I don't behave this way, then I'm not a good person. I'm not a good Buddhist. I'm a failure. If we relate to them as trainings, then they can help us in this process of cultivating right effort, of developing the skillful and letting go of the unskillful. The precepts are really the foundation of our practice. the Buddha said that virtue is the forerunner for the development of mindfulness. So if we're really engaged in working with the precepts, then we're setting the conditions for mindfulness to arise as well, both in our everyday lives and when we sit on the cushion. Another way of understanding the precepts is that they serve as protections for us. The precepts are usually, the traditional phrases are all in terms of what I'm not going to do, what I'm going to give up doing. And so sometimes it can feel like it is all about renunciation. It is all about giving stuff up. Maybe it feels like giving up some of the stuff that makes us feel good, you know? But actually, we can look at the precepts as protections for us. Because by setting an intention to behave in this particular way, when we get to a situation where we're kind of tempted to engage in this unskillful behavior, that intention will rise up in the mind at some point and remind us, kind of like a flag, maybe you shouldn't go here. Maybe you should go in a different direction. Or simply, pay attention to this. As we engage in working with the precepts, we're also engaging in four of the steps of the Noble Eightfold Path. There's the step of right intention. We've been talking about intention all along. The Buddha defined right intention as the intention of renunciation, the intention of non-ill will, and the intention of harmlessness. So when we practice with the first precept, which is the training in not taking the life of any living being, and meeting life with an attitude of metta or goodwill, when we're working with this precept, we're also working with the step of right intention, of renunciation, of non-ill will, of harmlessness. As we practice with the precepts, we're also working with the step of right speech. The fourth of the precepts is not engaging in speech that is false or harmful, and engaging in speech that is true, beneficial, being shared at an appropriate time and in an appropriate way. So in terms of retreat practice, where does right speech come in? We're not supposed to talk. Our practice of right speech is noble silence. John's already talked some about that. A couple of other things that I wanted to mention in terms of noble silence. And I say these things just because I've observed it happening on retreat, or I've engaged in it myself. So if you see somebody who's crying, and the compassionate impulse arises to give them a hug, the practice of noble silence on retreat is to not do so. Instead, pay attention to what's arising within you. The compassion that's there. And also, maybe there isn't just compassion there. Maybe there's a desire to make something go away. So, you know, just investigate what's there and allow that other person who's crying to encounter whatever it is that's happening in the world of their own experience at that moment. Another one of the practices of noble silence is not leaving notes for other retreatants, not leaving candy on people's cushions or flowers on people's cushions. You know, they're all very sweet kinds of things to do often, but it actually can be disturbing to the person who's receiving it. So, again, it's a matter of renunciation, of restraint, protecting their practices and protecting yours as well. This is sort of in the realm of noble silence. The door to the meditation hall makes a loud clunk. So as you're going in and out, just help the door to close so that it closes quietly rather than just walking out and letting it close on its own. Over time, I think you'll find that it's more soothing for you as well as for everybody else. And the last thing I want to say about right speech is that it also has to do with how we talk inside. How are you talking to yourself? What are you saying inside about everybody else? So just notice, again, be awake to. Rest in your own Buddha and notice, this is what's happening here. Notice particularly when you're talking to yourself, if there's a quality of harshness to it. Are you being kind to yourself? Or are you being really judgmental? And would you be that way with anyone else? Just investigate it. Just see for yourself what's happening. Let go of it and come back to the present moment as gently as you can. So those are some of the practices of right speech as we're on retreat. We also practice with the step of right action, which the Buddha described as abstinence from destruction of life, abstinence from taking what is not given, abstinence from sexual misconduct. So right action involves the first precept we've already talked about, harmlessness, not taking life. It involves the second precept, which involves not taking what hasn't been given. So that's the unwholesome or unskillful side of it. And the skillful side is practicing generosity. And right action has to do with the third precept, which concerns how we handle our sexuality. So when we're on retreat, and this is the phrase that we'll be using this weekend, while we're on retreat, the practice is really from abstaining from any form of intentional sexual activity. Remember, activity means actions. What kinds of actions? Thoughts, words, deeds. So, abstaining from any form of intentional sexual activity while we're on retreat. That means if the impulse comes up, rest in the Buddha. Rest in the Dhamma. Just see it as it is. It's an impulse arising. It's a thought arising. Can you just let it be as that? Sexuality is one of the most powerful forces in our lives. So, you know, it's not easy. But notice it. Notice it. This is where that idea of precepts as protections come in. If you take this, really take this to heart as one of your intentions while you're on retreat, then if you find yourself having sexual thoughts about somebody you see, it can serve as a flag. Oh, this is something to pay attention to rather than to fantasize about. Something to really practice with. And then in our daily lives, unless we're celibate, unless we've taken a vow of celibacy, then this precept has to do with not using our sexuality in a way that's harmful to ourselves or others, and respecting the commitments that we've made as well as the commitments that other people have made. The fourth step that I mentioned in the Eightfold Path that we work with in the precepts is right livelihood. And this is usually understood in terms of, you know, engaging in a livelihood, a way of working, a way of making income that is skillful, that isn't harmful to ourselves or others. So what does it mean when we're on retreat? Well, I really think it means engaging in the work of awakening to our lives. So this whole retreat, when we're practicing with that intention to wake up, to be aware of what it is we're experiencing right now, we're cultivating, we're strengthening this quality of right livelihood. It The fifth precept doesn't fit with any particular step specifically, but really it has to do with all of these and with all of the other precepts, because it's about not using any kind of intoxicating drink or drugs that cloud the mind or that lead to heedlessness. So this isn't about not taking a medication that we need for any kind of a medical condition. You know, if you need to take some medicine for something like that, then the wise thing to do is to do that. It's more about the other things that we ingest. You know, specifically, the Buddha's talking about alcohol and mind-altering substances. But if we want, we can broaden it to other things. Some people like to look at it in terms of the television programs that they read or that they watch or the books that they read. I used to really enjoy reading these crime novels by our Norwegian mystery writer. But they had some really gruesome scenes in them. And last year I was on retreat, and these scenes kept coming back to me. They're really pretty awful things imagining, you know, happening to people. And I thought, you know, I have to stop reading this guy's books because this really isn't something that I want in my mind. So it's worth paying attention to. And this is part of the process of, you know, this is a training. So what does it mean? What does this particular precept mean to me at this particular time in my life? Maybe it means looking at the books that I'm reading. Or maybe it means, am I using alcohol or not? This is why it's a training, because we have to kind of sort these things out for ourselves. So what I'd like for us to do now is to take the refuges and precepts, and then we're going to take a break, take a potty break, and we'll come back and begin to do meditation. Okay? So is there anybody who's not familiar with the homage to the Buddha or the refuges or the precepts? Okay. I think what we'll do with the homage to the Buddha and with the refuges is, just as a group, we'll chant them together. And you can just try to follow along as best you can. That's how we all learn. And what I'd like to do with both the homage and with the refuges is they're presented three times. And so I'd like for us to do them in Pali three times and then do them in English once. So with the homage, we'll do the Namo Tassa three times and then just one line in English. And with the refuges, we'll go through all of the Pali and then just kind of the first stanza that's in English. And then I'll explain the precepts when we get to those. Okay? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly awakened one. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dhamma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. So how many of you are familiar with the Pali for the five precepts? Okay. Why don't we do this kind of in a call and response sort of thing? I'll do a word in Pali, and then you will all do a word in Pali. And so we'll work our way through the line word by word, and then we'll do what it means in English. And then we'll do the English all together. And then we'll go to the next line in Pali, and again we'll do it call and response word by word. Okay? Panatipata, panatipata, varamani, varamani, sikapadang, sikapadang, samadhiyami, samadhiyami. I undertake the training of refraining from taking the life of any living being. Adinadana, adinadana, varamani, varamani, sikapadang, padang, samadhiyami, samadhiyami. I undertake the training of refraining from taking that which is not given. Actually, we're going to use a different word here. Abrahmacharya, abrahmacharya, varamani, varamani, sikapadang, sikapadang, samadhiyami, samadhiyami. So this line's a little different. I undertake the training of refraining from any form of intentional sexual activity. I undertake the training of refraining from any form of intentional sexual activity. Musavada, musavada, varamani, varamani, sikapadang, sikapadang, samadhiyami, samadhiyami. I undertake the training of refraining from false and harmful speech. Saramaraya, saramaraya, maja, maja, pamadatana, pamadatana, varamani, varamani, sikapadang, sikapadang, Samadhiyami, Samadhiyami. I undertake the training of refraining from intoxicating drink and drugs, which lead to carelessness. And then at the top of the next page, Idang Me Silang Magaphala Jnana Nasa Magaphala Jnana Nasa Pachayo Hotu. May this skillful behavior be a condition for knowledge of the path and fruit.